This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
Have you ever been kind to someone only to have it rebuffed, rejected, or just taken for granted? The illustrations that come to mind kind of quickly are all the ways that parents go out of their way for their kids, only to have them demand for more, right? It's never enough at times. And so I know I've talked to parents about that. I know I'm guilty of that as a child. I think back of things growing up that I was just, that I took advantage of my parents' kindness. But it really does make you wonder, do you take advantage of others and their kindness? So for me, that's often seen in my life, or often revealed when I'm complaining a lot. There's seasons of life where I tend to complain more. And if I look at like the thing behind the thing of why I'm complaining, it's probably the fact that I'm taking advantage of kindness. Life really isn't as raw as I'm thinking it is. It probably is. I'm just not grateful. Whenever I'm increasingly complaining or just blue about life or how life ought to be doing this or that to me, I'm probably taking some sort of kindness for granted. And after all, I mean, we can just look to God and know that's true, right? The God who made me for himself has put up with an awful lot from me, and he still loves me. He still gives me breath. He showers me with all kinds of good things. So if we're honest, we all take kindness for granted at times. And you might remember where we ended up in last week's sermon. We're making our way through 2 Samuel 10, and so thank you for plodding with me all year. I think we started the third Sunday of the year in 1 Samuel 1, and we have been just making our way through this book throughout the year, and I know it's been encouraging to many of you. But last week we ended up in chapter 9. We talked about God's kingdom and some expectations we can have, like trusting or even expecting that God will keep his promises. God will do what he said he was going to do. So in chapter 7, God said he would do a certain thing for David. In chapter 8, he basically did it. He gave him rest from all of his enemies. And so the implication for us was we could trust God's promises. And then when David had rest from all of his enemies in chapter 9, his mind just drifted to how can I show love to others? How can I show love to the house of Jonathan? And so he expressed that covenant love to others out of the overflow of God's kindness to him. David's kindness to Mephibosheth, for Jonathan's sake, was an amazing picture of how God has treated us. And that's exactly what God's done for us. He's reassured us that we don't have to fear. He's showered us with his love, and he's invited us to eat at his table. It's an incredible thing. And so today, we're going to see that covenant love extended again. That covenant kindness, the kingdom kindness is what I'm calling it in this passage. It's extended to others. And we're going to see a response to that. And so it's going to help us see how we can live in God's kingdom. You know, it's easy to love when it's reciprocated. Just like it's easy to serve when everything's convenient, right? When there's no difficulty in service, everybody wants that job. We're not inconvenienced at all, but allow some piece of resistance or a jaded response or a less than enthusiastic expression of thanks be sent towards us when we're trying to do what's right and good, and we'll quickly see what our hearts are like. And today, this is a great thing to think about. What comes out of your heart when you love or serve and it's rejected, or it's taken advantage of, or it's simply stomped on? Are you compelled to keep loving? Or do you give up? Are your eyes fixed on the injustice? Or are you able to look and put your eyes on the one who was despised and rejected by sinners who needed saved from their despising and rejecting? I mean, that's who we have, what we have in Jesus. Are you able to, some of us are just overwhelmed by the injustice, or are your eyes fixed on Jesus? So we need lessons on kingdom kindness. We need to know what this looks like. After all, I mean, have you all, maybe there's some in this room who every week they just pray the Lord's Prayer. And what do we pray in the Lord's Prayer? That God's kingdom would come and his will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. And when you pray that, the reason you're praying that is because you're expecting that things are not like they should be. That's why you're praying, God, change something. Let your kingdom come, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. There's a reason that that's the pattern. So today, you may even realize through all this that I've been trying to get out in the introduction that your life has taken for granted God's kindness. You may see that that's true in your life. And I don't want to scold you as much as I want to remind you that God is intimately acquainted with all of your ways. He's not shocked. He's not surprised. He's not disappointed in you. In fact, he's longing for a relationship with you so that you can be freed from all the burdens that you bring to the table. And so today, I hope through this crazy passage that you'll learn something about God's kindness, about his heart, and that would characterize your life. In fact, every single one of us in this room is in need of that. It's so easy to forget to be grateful to God. And today's a great day to settle in on the realities of kingdom kindness and give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love. You could say his kingdom kindness endures forever. So join me today as we see three expectations for kingdom kindness and what we can expect really when kingdom kindness is rejected. Three expectations for us when kingdom kindness is rejected. So let me go ahead and read all of 2 Samuel 10, then we'll quickly undo it and try to explain what's going on there, and then we'll be done. So 2 Samuel 10, beginning in verse 1, here's what we read. After this, the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanun his son reigned in his place. And David said, I will deal loyally with Hanun the son of Nahash, as his father dealt loyally with me. So David sent by his servants to console him concerning his father. And David's servants came into the land of the Ammonites. But the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun their lord, Do you think because David has sent comforters to you that he is honoring your father? Has not David sent his servants to you to search the city and to spy it out and overthrow it? So Hanun took David's servants and shaved off half the beard of each and cut off their garments in the middle at the hips and sent them away. When it was told David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, Remain at Jericho until your beards have grown and then return. When the Ammonites saw that they had become a stench to David, the Ammonites sent and hired the Syrians of Beth Rehob and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Maacah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob, 12,000 men. And when David heard it, he sent Joab and all the hosts of the mighty men. And the Ammonites came out and drew up in battle array at the entrance of the gate. And the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and the men of Tob and Maacah were by themselves in the open country. When Joab saw that the battle was set against him in both the front and the rear, he chose some of the best men in Israel and arrayed them against the Syrians. The rest of his men he put in charge of Abishai, his brother, and he arrayed them against the Ammonites. And he said, If the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I will come and help you. Be of good courage and let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what seems good to him. So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the Ammonites saw that the Syrians fled, they likewise fled before Abishai and entered the city. Then Joab returned from fighting against the Ammonites and came to Jerusalem. But when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together, and Hadadezer sent and brought out the Syrians who were beyond the Euphrates. They came to Helam with Shobach, the commander of the army of Hadadezer, at their head. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and crossed the Jordan and came to Helam. The Syrians arrayed themselves against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel. And David killed of the Syrians the men of 700 chariots and 40,000 horsemen, and wounded Shobach, the commander of their army, so that he died there. And when all the kings who were servants of Hadadezer saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subject to them. So the Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites anymore. This is God's word. Thanks be to God. So three expectations when kingdom kindness is rejected. And the first expectation at the beginning here, as we try to make sense of what's going on in David's kingdom and how does that relate to us, what do we learn is that kingdom kindness will be rejected. It'll be rejected. Way back in verse 1. Chapter 10 begins like a lot of other chapters did with that phrase, after this. So it's being tied into what previously happened, tying this to the events of chapter 9. Many scholars believe that chapter 9 kicked off a new unit. And so all that's going to happen in chapters 11 and 12, maybe some of the most infamous passages of 2 Samuel, right? That's all tied to when David's fighting the Ammonites. So there's a context being set up here. One simple way to make sense of this, as one writer suggests, is to see chapter 9 as covenant love received, and then chapter 10 as covenant love not well received. So in chapter 9, covenant love was extended to Mephibosheth, and he received that. And oh man, what it is a great thing to be your servant. In chapter 10, covenant love was extended to Hanan, and he rejects it. So here's the setting. The king of the Ammonites had died. And Hanan, whose name means grace, by the way, he's not very gracious in this passage to anyone, but Hanan is Nahash's son. He reigns in his place. Now, we might remember the Ammonites and Nahash from an early encounter of Saul in 1 Samuel. So I think it was 1 Samuel 11, 12, right in there. This was when Saul had a really great battle. Nahash threatened that he was going to like make all of Israel his people, and Saul basically stepped into battle and won the day. It was his shining moment. But this is a classic case, I think, of my enemy's enemy becoming my friend. So Saul's enemy became a friend to David. And so that's all told to us there in those early verses, right? We read of David's loyalty. He says, I'll deal loyally with Hanan, the son of Nahash, as his father dealt loyally with me. That word loyally is kind of the same covenant love, kind of kindness. I'm going to show kindness to him because his father showed kindness to me. Evidently, Nahash had extended some sort of kindness to David. We weren't told what this is in the Bible, but David decides to show kindness and loyalty to Hanan. So David sends servants to console him concerning his father. They come into the land of the Ammonites. But paranoia is what the princes practice there, I guess. So they question David's loyalty. They mistake David's attempts to honor Hanan's father with a desire to search the city, spy it out, and overthrow it. So it's almost like they've jumped to some major conclusions. They don't need to jump to conclusions map. They've already jumped to quite a few, right? They've gotten it. They're reaching some conclusions here that are going to get them in big trouble. And so this leads to Hanan's rejection. He takes David's servants and disgraces them. He shaves off half their beard. And I'm just going to let the readers understand here. He cuts off their garments in the middle at their hips. Okay, let's just think about what that would be like. If you were wearing like a garment and then it was cut off in the middle at the hips, it would be a disgraceful thing, right? Does everybody know what I'm talking about? We're awfully quiet today. Like, are we alive out there? This is really disgraceful. And they sent them away. So, I mean, just think about how crazy this is. Let's just assume the best about David because he's mopped the floor with everybody in the region. Let's assume maybe he is there to spy. Why would you want to disgrace his servants and send them back in this way, disgraced? That's what's going on here. So let's suppose David's intentions were other than what he stated. Surely this isn't going to grease the skids of the peace talks. Like, they're not going to be able to sit down at the table with Joab and say, you know, we really have your best interest at heart. And Joab's going to be like, really? Shaving off my guys' beards and cutting off their gowns at the waist is the way you want peace? So this is a huge deal. So I think I put in your notes like make beard not war or something. The idea of this is that the reason why that's so disgraceful, Leviticus 21:5 forbid a Hebrew to wear a beard like this. So it's a violation of the law. It's disgraceful to them. And so the news reaches David and he sends some people to meet them. To meet these half-beard, cut-off-at-the-waist guys. And he encourages them to stay in Jericho until the beards had grown back and then to return. So, by the way, happy No Shave November, but to grow a beard would have taken some time. Like, it's not just because the king has decreed this that the beard's going to grow back supernaturally quickly. It's going to take some time to accomplish. And so if you think about this being an honor-shame culture, this is a big deal. To be publicly disgraced like this was basically Hanan publicly declaring war against David. This is how significant it was. We mentioned last time, last week, Psalm 2. Do you remember that? Psalm 2, verses 10 and 12 warned us. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. And then we're encouraged to kiss the Son. So kiss the Lord's anointed, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are those who take refuge in him. So Hanan isn't treating God's anointed in this way. He's provoking the king. So we can almost feel that trouble's coming. In fact, we read the whole chapter, so we know trouble's coming. But by way of application for us, do you see how kingdom kindness was just rejected? If a king like David was rejected when he's trying to show kindness to others, can we just please adjust our expectations accordingly? I mean, we tend to think that we're greater than David, and someone greater than David has come, but it's not you or me. Kindness, kingdom kindness, doing the right thing, showing love to others in the right way, is going to be rebuffed, it's going to be misunderstood, it's going to be rejected. So can we just like step out and expect that that's going to be the norm when it comes to God's kingdom? Some of us are shocked at times that the world rejects covenant love. They reject our love of them. And we're shocked, like, why are they doing this? I'm trying to help them. I'm trying to love them. It's always been the case for God's people. When they try to love their enemies don't understand what's going on. So this is a great way for us to expect that this is part of God's kingdom. We allow our feelings to get so hurt that we forget our calling. Love marks us as the people of God. This is what is like defines us, love. So let's not be marked by crabby, complaining, ungrateful whining. Let's just expect we're going to love people and it's not going to go well at times. It didn't go well for David. It did at times, right? So there's going to be people that get it, yes. But there's going to be people, especially outsiders, who don't get it at all. And we shouldn't be shocked by that. We shouldn't be alarmed that, why don't they understand? I'm trying to do good for them. It's okay. They don't understand that. It's going to be rejected. So we can step out with kingdom kindness expecting rejection. That's the first expectation here. Secondly, another expectation is that kingdom kindness rests in God's goodness. It rests in the Lord's goodness. And so, in verses 6 through 14, kind of the plot thickens. The Ammonites realize they made a mistake in verse 6. They see that they've become a stench to David. And so they realize, we're going into battle with David, we get better to have our ducks in a row, so they hire other soldiers. And we get a quick report of the nation and the number of the soldiers there. The Syrians of Beth-Rabab and Zobah, 20,000 men. The king of Maacah, 1,000 men. And the men of Tob, 12,000 men. So this is going to go down. Escalation's upon us. David hears of it. And in the days when the kings go off to war, what does David do? Joab, go fight this battle for me. Okay, so he sends Joab into battle. With all of his elite fighters, the Ammonites come out ready to fight at the gate's entrance with all those hired forces by themselves in the open country. So you have the Ammonites on one side, all those forces that they hired on the other side, Israel in the middle. And in verse 9, we see Joab's plan of attack in this battle. Since he's surrounded to the front and the back, he put some of the best men to fight the Syrians, and the rest were put in Abishai's care to fight against the Ammonites. And the plan is simple. Let's help each other. Okay, so if the battle goes bad for you, we're going to come help. If the battle goes bad for you, we're going to come help. But then we get this only announcement of God in the entire chapter. This is to be done in faith. The only mention of God in verse 12. So you might circle verse 12 or underline it or highlight it. Joab says, be of good courage. Let's be courageous for our people. The cities of our the cities of God, and may the Lord do what seems good to him. So may the Lord do this. And the battle ended pretty quickly, right? I once visited a Civil War battlefield in Corydon, Indiana. It's right on the western edge of Louisville, Kentucky. And so I went there with some guys from our church, and we're touring this Civil War battlefield, and we're like, oh man, we're on hallowed ground. What happened here? And we read the details of the battle. Like a cannon was fired, and everybody fled. That's the battle. There's nothing else. I'm sorry. There was nothing else that happened. Like, shots were fired and people turned tail and ran. And that's what happened here. Joab and his men drew near to fight the Syrians and they fled. So when danger reared its ugly head, the Syrians turned their tail and fled. And the Ammonites fled too. So Abishai entered the city and Joab returned to Jerusalem. So this is how the hostilities began. Right? Kingdom kindness informs our response, which we can draw from Joab's example, which was resting in the Lord's goodness. Let's let the Lord do whatever seems good to him. Right? This was the ultimate hope that Joab had in this disagreement, that the Lord would do what seemed good to him. And that's your and my only hope. When we step out in covenant love, when we step out in kingdom kindness, knowing that it's going to be rejected by others, when we step out, this is our hope. May the Lord do what seems good to him. Through our love, may he do that. People will misunderstand your motives. They'll question, why are you the way you are? Why do you see the world the way you see it? They'll even rebel against you. But will we be a people who trust in the Lord? That is always the question for the people of God. Will we rest in his goodness? Will we trust him? Do we have confidence that he'll do what seems good to him? That's what Joab said. Let's be of good courage. Let's be courageous, right? So he's saying, let there be something inside of us, but let us also act in accordance with that courage. And the reason we can do that is because God will do whatever seems good to him. We can rest in him. We can trust that he'll do this. We don't have to worry and fret. So even in 1 Peter, Peter's encouragement to believers who are facing the literal fire, he says to them in 1 Peter 4:19, therefore, let those who suffer according to God's will entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good. Right? So it's we're trusting that God will do whatever seems good to him. And so we're just entrusting ourselves and we just keep doing good. We keep showing kindness to others. We do that. It's our nature now as believers to do this. We rest in the Lord's goodness. This is what kingdom kindness does. Even in the midst of all these hostilities, you may think, well, you don't know kind of the pressure I'm under. Is it more pressure than these two armies threatening to crash down on Joab? You know, all the Ammonites on one side, all this massive hired force on the other. It's probably not greater than that, right? So just chill and rest. That the Lord will do whatever seems good to him. Let's be of good courage. Let's be courageous. God's got this, doesn't he? We can step out in love, and it's going to go bad. People are going to misunderstand. It's not going to be as effective as we want it to be. But God will use that however he sees fit. So that's the second expectation when it comes to kingdom kindness. And all this leads to the third, and how this all ends in verses 15 through 19. The kingdom kindness can draw out the fear of God. It can draw out the fear of God. So as this passage draws to a close, we see part of the aim that God intends for this resistance. But first, we see more hostilities. So the Syrians kind of are embarrassed, I think, that they just turned tail and ran. And so they don't want to be defeated. So they look to Hadadezer for help. So another army gathers. It's told to David. So he gathers his troops to fight, and he crosses the Jordan to Helam. The Syrians fought against David, but the passage ends with a word of David's victory and the reverence the people have for David, right? The Syrians fled with David killing the Syrians. So he killed men riding 700 chariots, and he killed another 40,000 horsemen. This is a brutal battle. He also mortally wounded Shobach, the commander of the army. And the final word of verse 19 is that when all the kings of Hadadezer saw they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subject to them. So this is the final word, fear. They became subject to them. The Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites anymore. Fear. So this chapter ends with Israel strong, with David revered, and rest, peace on every conceivable side. What enemy is going to stop them? Well, we know, like as the next chapter unfolds, now we have the more sinister enemy, the enemy within, right? So the enemy within David himself, the enemy in his house with all of his sons being a train wreck. That's the rest of the book. But it's not because of the other nations. You know, so the focus here is God gave him rest from all the other nations. Tim Chester helped me connect this. So listen to this quote. To see who David is, or to see the God who fights for him, is to fear David and the God who fights for him. In other words, it's not so much a reverence for David as much as it is why David can like win all these battles. And why can he do that? Well, we've been told that over and over again in 2 Samuel. It's the Lord who's doing this. It's the Lord who's fighting for him. It's the Lord who's keeping his promises. It's the Lord who's making good on all this. So it's about a reverence for the Lord that's driving all this. That's the issue in the end game for us too. Worship. We want our kingdom kindness, the aim of our kingdom kindness, or kind of the upward thrust of kingdom kindness, is to draw out reverence for God. It's to draw out a fear of him. It's not about us, it's about him. So does your kingdom kindness, does your acts of love provoke a fear of God? What's missing? Now, I know it's easy to look at this passage and say, well, David doesn't seem very kind here. I mean, he's killing like 40,000 people, right? How are you even conceiving this is about kindness? And I think I just want to remind you that it's not necessarily David, it's God. God's the one who's promised Abraham and David that all these other nations, I will take care of them. So, I mean, we have to have a bigger view. We can't, if you read this just all by itself, it looks like, man, David's the cat's meow. Who wouldn't want a general like David? And why doesn't he just kill everybody? And oh, wow, awesome David. But if you've read the whole story beginning in 1 Samuel, you know that this is the Lord's doing. You know it's about God's name. You know it's about his fame. You know it's about him keeping his word. That doesn't authorize us to go kill people. Remember, that's not our calling. But it's God is the one who makes the difference. And so that's, I think that gets to kind of the heart of this. Maybe the reason our kindness doesn't pop is because it's more about us than it is him. That's the issue. Maybe we're in the way. Our practice of love is way more about us than it is him. And so therefore, that's why no reverence for him is ever provoked or drawn out. Fear of God can be drawn out of kingdom kindness, covenant love. So in conclusion, as we wrap all this up, we've seen three expectations for when kingdom kindness is rejected. That number one, it will be rejected. That ought to be our expectation. We should expect that love is going to be rejected. It rests in the Lord's goodness. That's what it leans into when times go tough. It's the Lord will do whatever seems good to him. And then it can draw out the fear of God. That's the aim. That's the fuel of this. That's what's driving our kingdom kindness in this world. That it's about reverence of God. It's about the fear of him. It's about, that's the end of the day. We want him to be revered and feared. So this morning as we wrap, kingdom kindness is all about God. So turn with me to Romans 2. In Romans 2, Paul makes this point. In verses 4 and 5, Paul writes and says, "Do you presume on the riches of God's kindness and his forbearance and his patience, not knowing that God's kindness is meant to lead you to repentance? But because of your hard and impenitent heart, you're storing up wrath for yourself on the day of wrath when God's righteous judgment will be revealed." That's the issue. That's how it relates to the fear of God. Are you presuming on God's kindness? And is it driving you to be more dependent on him, to turn from your ways and rest in him? Or are you just presuming on it, not realizing that you're storing up more wrath and punishment for yourself on the day of judgment? What's it going to be? Are you going to embrace God's kindness and say, "Man, I got to turn from my ways. I'm so easily just drawn to go my own way"? Or are you going to hear God's kindness and say, "Man, I love him. That's, where else could I run?" This is the issue. God's demonstrating kindness to all kinds of sinners in the world as an expression of his forbearance and patience that they might find repentance. So today, is that you? Maybe you've presumed on all of God's goodness. Don't resist him. Don't store up wrath for yourself. Just turn from your sin and bank on God's goodness, finding grace and help for everything you need. Look to him. And if you're a believer, because our God's character is kindness, he's working this out in us as well. So the fruit of the Spirit, what is that? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness. I never see, the fruit of the Spirit is never that you be a jerk. I just don't see that, right? The fruit of the Spirit is you're a jerk. No, it's not. It's crazy. And we act like we can get away with that at times. Like, "Well, I can be a jerk because you know how these people are, these dirt bags, whatever." No, the fruit of the Spirit is kindness. This is what God's working in you. So which characterizes you? And, you know, kingdom kindness is going to be rejected. We should expect that. But we can rest in God's goodness and know that all of this ultimately is about him, not us. So let's center our expressions of kindness in God. Let's just recenter in him, that all of our kingdom kindness in the world, all of our love, all of our, you know, as David did in this passage, all of our dealing loyally with others. Let's let all that be centered in God and his character and be a demonstration to the world of a reverence for God in the ways we act. And all this might be that we would glorify and enjoy him forever.